AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you on a Monday afternoon. Kate filling in for Sam, so always happy to have Kate behind the board and making sure things run smoothly on the other side of the glass. Yeah, you heard that forecast right. I just read a few minutes ago, an inch or two of snow tomorrow night. So to that guy who called during the Matt McNeil show from Tempe, Arizona, wanting some of our water, I think we could give them 1 to 2 inches of that snow we're supposed to get. But in regards to that snow, though, so everyone always freaks out when we get that first snowfall in late October or early November. The thing is, the ground is still too warm for any of that snow to even really stick. You probably need at least like 5-6 inches before you're actually going to get any of that snow to actually stay on the ground. So, yeah, probably not a good chance we're actually going to see too much of that snow really last into Wednesday. You might see a coating of it as you wake up early Wednesday morning. But, yeah, don't get paranoid about it. I'm sure we'll see all sorts of those social media posts on Wednesday morning of people freaking out saying, hey, it snowed for the first time this season. Although I think we technically did get a little bit of snow over the weekend. At least the roof of the place where I live had a little bit of snow left over from the storm we had overnight during the weekend, I believe Saturday night into Sunday. So before we get into the political news for today, did I actually want to bring up this survey that Gallup conducted in terms of the amount of money consumers plan on spending during the holiday season on gifts. And this, so I'm probably not the best person to measure whether this number actually seems really high since, well, I don't have any kids. But to me, this number seems super high. Most Americans plan on spending an average of $942 on holiday gifts this Christmas season, which, again, I have no kids, so I probably am not the best person to measure, but really $942 on Christmas gifts, yeah, that actually seems really high to me. That's actually the highest amount we've ever planned on spending here in this country on holiday gift giving. The next highest amount actually was just before the Great Recession when we were planning on spending apparently $909 back in 2007. So yeah, $942 seems way too high to me. Some of the gift giving I think kind of needs to go the way of Hallmark greeting cards because at least in my family, we finally stopped giving out greeting cards, whether it's for birthdays or holiday season or any anniversaries, anything like that. We've finally gotten away from buying those greeting cards from Hallmark that you find at Walgreens or a CVS or your local grocery store. So at least we've avoided that. Hopefully holiday gift giving can largely go in that same direction since I think, well, for most people, it's just more about actually seeing your friends and family during the holidays. Not so much about actually spending a whole bunch of money on gift giving. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, as always, is the phone number here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Do briefly want to touch on this story about Bob Kroll and WCCO reporter Liz Collin. So it was reported in City Pages today, in case you happen to miss it, that the head of the Minneapolis Police Union, Bob Kroll, is married to WCCO reporter Liz Collin, which on the surface is not a bad thing. But here's where the problem starts. If you look at previous news stories written by Liz Collin for WCCO or reported on by Liz Collin, a few of them have actually been about the Minneapolis Police Force and the Minneapolis Police Union, including a 2016 piece where she was writing about the use of force and she happened to interview, guess who? Bob Kroll. She also wrote a piece in 2018 about former police chief Jhené Harto, who of course had many run-ins with Bob Kroll during her tenure. And she also had a few other stories that people were able to dig up on Twitter from over the past few years where Liz Collin was reporting on Minneapolis police actions, and a lot of them actually had to do with her husband, Bob Kroll. So to me, the problem isn't so much the relationship itself. I mean, they're, of course, free to have a relationship and get married. I think more of the burden actually falls on CCO for not actually putting some sort of disclaimer on any of these stories that, hey, the reporter on this story is actually married to the head of the Minneapolis Police Union. I mean, for instance, for me, I guess my claim to fame for having a relative who is in political office is that my uncle, Brad Wiersum, is the mayor of Minnetonka. So if on my program I were to interview Minnetonka Mayor Brad Wiersum, I would be very uncomfortable if I did not say that he happens to be my uncle. And that's not even, of course, close to the same thing as having this relationship between Liz Collin and Bob Kroll, where they're married, and of course he's the head of the Minneapolis Police Union. So, yeah, a number of very problematic ethical problems over there at CCO. Of course, they don't say when they got married, but even if it was within the past few years, she's still written many stories about the Minneapolis Police Union, and no disclaimers whatsoever. Yeah, a little bit of a lapse of judgment there, if I may say. Again, in my case, if I had any sort of relationship, whether it's romantic or a relative or even someone that's just a close friend and I were interviewing them here on my program, I would be very forthright in saying, hey, I know this person previously. They're a good friend of mine or they're a relative. I would be very uncomfortable if I did not, just because, well, it just comes off as completely disingenuous. So, yeah, a little bit of work to go over there over at the other station in Minneapolis in terms of disclosing that relationship between Collin and Bob Kroll. 952-946-6205. So Bernie Sanders was, of course, in town last night having a rally in Minneapolis that also featured Ilhan Omar. Now, a lot of the conversation regarding Ilhan Omar and a couple other members of the so-called squad endorsing Bernie Sanders, the narrative we often hear is that, oh, well, they endorsed Bernie Sanders, and, well, it doesn't really matter because people who are fired up by the squad or like the squad were probably going to vote for Bernie Sanders anyway, so therefore it's probably not going to help him very much in the primary election. And to a degree, they're sort of right, and the polls actually show that, but they're also sort of wrong as well. So let me explain. They're sort of right in the fact that since Omar and AOC endorsed Bernie Sanders, his poll numbers, if you look at poll aggregators, have largely remained the same. He's still polling somewhere between 15 or 20%, and he's pretty much been stuck in that little window of 15 to 20% since about April of this year. But I think there is something that is missing from this endorsement that could potentially help him in the primary, and that, of course, is being endorsed by members of the squad could increase voter enthusiasm for him, which is key when you look at some of these early states in 2020 that will be making their selections for who will get the Democratic nomination, and it's caucus states where this could have a much bigger impact because for someone to go to a caucus, for instance, Iowa is a great example, you largely have to be very fired up about politics and really excited about an election. And if you just add to that enthusiasm of having someone like a Bernie Sanders endorsed by Ilhan Omar, AOC et al., that of course makes it much more likely that people who say when they're asked in poll questions if they're going to vote for Bernie Sanders, makes them much more likely that they're going to vote for him in primaries and caucuses, and they're going to try to get their friends. So I don't think we can necessarily discount the endorsement that AOC and Omar have made of Bernie Sanders, even though when you look at polling numbers, it really hasn't had much of an effect. I think it goes more towards that enthusiasm angle, where it could potentially give him a few extra percentage points when it comes to early voting. Granted, he still has quite a ways to climb in the polls, being that Joe Biden has actually seen his numbers rise a few percentage points over the past few weeks, while Liz Warren has actually seen her numbers go down by a couple of points. Well, I've also seen a rise from Pete Buttigieg by a few, kind of solidifying his place as the number four candidate. But yeah, Bernie still stuck in that 15 to 20% range. But I do think increasing enthusiasm, even though that might not show up in polling data, could give him a little bit of an edge when it comes to early voting states that have caucuses, especially like Iowa and, well, sort of Minnesota. Of course, next year we're going to be using more of a hybrid system between a straight primary system versus the traditional caucuses that we had in Minnesota prior to 2020. Let's take a look at some other national news. So Bloomberg is reporting that U.S. farm bankruptcies in September of this year actually surged by 24% to its highest levels since 2011. That's amid strains from President Trump's trade war with China and also a year of some very, well, wild weather, of course. So growers are also becoming increasingly dependent on trade aid and other federal programs for income. And figures showed in a report by the American Farm Bureau's Federation that the NAGE's largest general farm organization also reported that, yeah, bankruptcies again to their highest level since 2011. So what I find interesting about this that, of course, yeah, we have a high number of farm bankruptcies is that if you look at a lot of the donors to the Trump campaign, you see a lot of people who are involved with big ag. And being that, well, the president is a real estate person, if you have a lot of bankrupt farms from that are small family-owned farms, well, that, of course, makes them cheap to be gobbled up by a lot of these big corporate farms. And I think that's my exactly what we're saying. With this situation with some of these farms going bankrupt. And don't be surprised if a lot of these actually get gobbled up by some of these big corporate farms. We'll head to the phone lines in just one second, but I briefly want to touch on this national story as well. So you may have seen this play during some media, during some TV reports or maybe on social media, but that is Richard Spencer went on a, well, pretty epic rant against, well, a number of races. We'll leave it at that. A very racist rant. That's the best way to put it, with a lot of yelling and a lot of screaming. And what I kind of find funny about this is that apparently it took the media this long to figure out that Richard Spencer is actually a racist and he's not this calm, cool, collected person that he's always been perceived as, that wears a suit and talks very nicely when he does media interviews. Yeah, it took them finally until we actually see a very unhinged video of Richard Spencer to actually figure that out. Let's head to the phone lines and talk to Randy in St. Cloud. Hey there, Randy. What's on your mind?
Well, the last thing you just talked about perfectly illustrates my point. It took the media a long time to figure out that clown is a racist.
Yeah.
You know, really?
Yeah, they always perceived him as being, well, he has some controversial views, but look at how well-spoken he is.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the other Randy doesn't think the guy's a racist either, but that's neither here nor there. My point was, you were talking about that Bernie is behind and la-di-da-di-da, and that's because all of the mainstream media hates Bernie because he's diametrically opposed to everything they're for. You know, he's for all the pipe dreams. He's for all the stuff that Amy Klobuchar will assure us that we can't have. We can't have nice things. And all the same people paying into Klobuchar and Biden and all these clowns are the same people buying into CCO and ABC and the Star Tribune. The Star Tribune, every day for the last couple of weeks, has had a huge ad wrapped around their front page that's an ad for Medicare Advantage, which is the insurance part of Medicare that's the same.
It's basically
my words carefully.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a great system if you happen to not be sick. But if you get sick, well, then Medicare Advantage is, well, not so much of an advantage.
It's just like all the other insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you had that. That's too bad. If you would have broke your left leg, we'd cover that. But we don't cover right legs.
Mm-hmm.
You should have read your policy a little more closely. You know, we're just being fed so much crap. And Bernie is actually doing much better than he's being given credit for, because they don't want, if there's a, like, there was just a poll that showed that Bernie was in first place in New Hampshire. You know, I can't remember who it was, but it was, oh, they're very stolid.
No, you do bring up a good point. In statewide polls, yeah, candidates like him, even Elizabeth Warren, or even Pete Buttigieg are actually doing quite well. So, yeah, that's definitely different than talking about the national polls.
And the other thing that when that poll came out and Bernie was first, CNN did four or five stories about that poll. They never, ever mentioned that Bernie came in first. And one of the stories they did actually said, and Buttigieg came in fourth, but a very strong fourth. But we're not going to mention that Bernie came in first, because they don't want, they're so deathly afraid of Bernie winning. And that's why I think he's going to, because these guys are all getting it wrong. And I love it.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Randy. I'm a little hesitant to buy into some of the big conspiracy theories saying that, oh, the media is against Bernie. I think polling data usually ends up being within a few percentage points of being correct. And even if you go back and look at the 2016 primary polls, they largely were, with the exception of, I think, Michigan. That was the state that Bernie ended up actually winning, quite surprisingly. But to maybe add a little bit of fuel to Randy's fire, yeah, there certainly is a little bit of bias to quote-unquote anti-establishment candidates. For some reason, after the September debate, I got caught watching CNN. I think I just had the stream playing on my TV, and it was kind of funny as they were doing these interviews with all of the candidates post the debate. They were very friendly with Cory Booker. They were very friendly with Kamala Harris. They were very friendly with Pete Buttigieg, but all of a sudden they got Warren and Bernie on there, and oh, it was gotcha questions, and it was very contentious and a much different type of atmosphere. So yeah, there probably is a little bit of truth in the reporting, but we shall see with the poll, since I know it sounds like a broken record, they largely were correct in 2016 within the margin of error. But we'll have to see as we head into 2020, because I do think there is something to this enthusiasm angle that I was talking about with the endorsement of an Ilhan Omar and an AOC, among others. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So coming up next, we're going to be talking about elections that are taking place both locally and nationally, and also taking a look back at the anniversary of an election you may have forgotten about. That's all on the way here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett Johnson.
Auto Technical needs your help to keep our transportation program going. Social agencies like Workforce Training Center, Tubman Shelter, they rely on our mission of providing transportation to families in need. Donations of vehicles are down 80% because of the new tax laws. We really need vehicle donations to continue our mission. Help us, please. Give a call to Richard at 612-919-5526, autotechnical.org.
Hi, this is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. It's been great working with so many of the passionate AM 950 listeners over the years. We have realized how important AM 950 is to the community. I want to see AM 950 continue to grow and continue to thrive into the future. To help continue to grow, Snap Construction will be putting up proceeds to assist the station in marketing on social media. Snap Construction encourages you to do your part by liking and sharing the content on AM 950 social media platforms.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950. Ryan has always told me the best time to get work done is during the colder months of the year because demand is much lower. He is backing that up again by offering 30% off labor on windows and siding from now until the end of December. Call Snap Construction now to get 30% off labor on windows and siding. As always, Snap Construction stands by their work with a lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Trust the company AM 950 trusts, Snap Construction, arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, and window contractor in the metro area. Get a free estimate by calling 612-333-SNAP or find them online at snapconstruction.com. Financing options available.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at victors1959cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. I'm a better neighbor because my service has taught me how important it is to be a team player. My training helps me in my classes when I give attention to detail to the task at hand. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station. Hi, Gregory Rich, founder and chief at Habitation Furnishing and Design, and now I'd like to invite you to kill your Sunday evenings with me right here on AM 950 with Drink in the Style. It's a one-hour long conversation about interior design, art, architecture, and pretty much anything else, visual and aesthetic, all while enjoying some booze handcrafted by our friends at Gianni's Steakhouse in downtown Wayzata. Can you think of a better way to spend Sunday evenings? Drink in the Style, Sundays, 5 p.m.
Welcome back to the 4 o'clock show. Brett Johnson with you on a Monday afternoon. So yesterday you probably saw a lot of news reports saying that it is the 1 year mark until we have the 2020 election. That would be November 3rd, 2020. So yesterday we saw lots of reports saying we're 1 year away from the 2020 election. And look how enthusiastic the voting public is to vote in 2020. I believe it was 88% of respondents in an NBC survey showed that they are very enthusiastic about voting in 2020. But today there's actually another anniversary of an election, and this one is, well, one you probably forgot about. It's the one-year anniversary of the 2014 midterm elections, which took place, of course, on November 4th, 2014. So why am I bringing up the 2014 midterm elections? Well, it was actually the election that had the lowest voter turnout in any election since 1942. The lowest turnout since 1942, as just 36.4% of eligible voters actually ended up casting ballots back in 2014. So this goes to that idea of enthusiasm, because if you think back to 2014, the general mood of the public was, I don't like either party, and I'm just going to skip voting in that election. So if you look at what happened, of course, in 2014, that's where control of the Senate flipped from Democrats to Republicans, as the GOP was able to gain 9 overall seats. So let's talk about enthusiasm, though, because at that point, people weren't very enthusiastic about Obama, and they really weren't enthusiastic about Democrats whatsoever. In fact, if you look specifically at some of the senatorial campaigns from some of the Democratic candidates, you had Mark Udall in Colorado, who is basically just running on, aren't Republicans crazy? And not really getting his base fired up about what he would positively be doing if he were to return to the Senate. You had Mary Landrieu, who was basically running a pro-oil campaign, not really firing up her voting base at all. You also had a candidate for Senate in Kentucky, Allison Lundigan Grimes, who wouldn't even admit if she voted for Obama in 2012. So overall, it was a very depressed electorate. So why am I bringing this up? It's this idea of enthusiasm as we think about 2020. We know people are fired up to vote in 2020. But the question is, what happens after 2020? I'm going to single out one candidate in particular. That's Joe Biden, where, of course, he is leading in lots of, well, everyone's favorite thing, polls. He actually has a pretty wide lead as he's re-expanded his margin over the second-place candidate, Elizabeth Warren, and the third-place candidate, Bernie Sanders. But when you talk to a lot of the pollsters, they say, well, the enthusiasm for Joe Biden is not that high. So even if the general election polling, where you look at a Trump versus Joe Biden, Biden for now is winning by a very wide margin. Of course, that could very much narrow, which is exactly what happened to Hillary Clinton. At this point, she also had about a 10-point lead over Donald Trump. Then she saw her polling numbers continually narrow until it was just down to a few percentage points, enough to the point where Trump actually ended up winning the Electoral College. But that's neither here nor there. Let's go back to this enthusiasm idea, because what happens if these polls actually are right in the general election and you do get a President Joe Biden? Well, what actually happens in 2022 and 2024? Do you have that same type of voter turnout that we saw back in 2014? Because the presidency, and I've said this before, is pretty much useless if you don't have both houses of Congress, especially if you lose the Senate. And we don't want to see a repeat, especially if you're a Democrat, a repeat of what happened in 2014, because some of those elections that Dems lost are still coming back to haunt them. Among them are in Iowa, where at the time, Bruce Braley was supposed to be a shoo-in to beat Joni Ernst. If he was still in the Senate and had won in 2014, that would have given the Democrats one more senator. You also had a close election in North Carolina, where Tom Tillis knocked off Kay Hagan. You had a close election in Georgia, where it was Perdue who beat the Democrat Nunn 52-45. Also a close election in Colorado between the current Senator Cory Gardner and the former Democratic Senator Mark Udall. If those four elections had gone the other way, imagine how the Trump administration would have been able to function after 2016. That would have meant you would have had a Democratic majority, and you probably would not have had any of the Supreme Court justices, Gorsuch or Kavanaugh, appointed if you had a Democratic Senate. So some of those lessons we didn't learn in 2014 are still coming back to bite us here in 2020. And it is a concern I have for Democrats in this 2020 election cycle, where people are very excited to vote. But what happens after 2020? That is a very important question, because you could see a repeat of what happened with Obama, where you'll have some modest accomplishments during those first 2 years, but not a whole lot actually getting done after that. So keep that in mind, that you have to keep paying attention if you're involved in politics, and especially, well, not you if you're listening to AM 950. You're probably someone who goes and votes every single election. It's more about getting your friends, getting your family fired up, where if it's something you care about, you have to keep on, well, staying enthusiastic. And if you end up picking someone that doesn't really get voters fired up, well, you could end up having the exact same thing we saw back in 2010 and 2014. We're going to continue on with our election discussion and talking about some national races and some local races, which could have some pretty big impacts as we head into 2020. That's going to be on the way in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for the news from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service daily newscast for Monday, November 4th, 2019. I'm Dan Hyman. After calling for the Ukraine whistleblower to go public, Republicans in the Senate are divided on whether he or she should be allowed to testify in writing. Lawyers for the anonymous government official say that person is willing to answer written questions. Not everyone is in favor. It may be the world's most valuable company, but how much it's worth is subject to debate. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia had said the initial public offering of state oil company Saudi Aramco might be worth as much as $2 trillion. Now it looks like the value will be closer to $1.5 trillion. Last week, the owners of the Keystone XL pipeline announced its second leak in as many years, 380,000 gallons of oil into a North Dakota wetland. Opponents of that and other pipelines in South Dakota say they're mobilizing again now that a state anti-protest law has been overruled in court.
In 2016, a year-long protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline at Standing Rock failed to stop construction. This year, the state legislature passed the Riot Boosting Act to discourage future protests. The ACLU challenged the laws, and last month a judge blocked key provisions. Lead attorney Stephen Pivar says the law is clear that people who engage in force and violence can be prosecuted, but these laws went beyond that.
All you had to do was encourage somebody to object or protest against the pipeline, and you could go to prison for 25 years if that person then engaged in force and violence.
I'm Roz Brown.
This is PNS.
Over the weekend, Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar appeared with Vermont Senator and presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders at a campaign rally in Minneapolis. Omar, who represents Minnesota's 5th Congressional District, is one of three prominent female House freshmen to endorse Sanders. While the move might be making some waves nationally, University of Minnesota political science professor Tim Lindberg predicts it won't move the needle much, since these endorsements aren't too surprising.
That plays into a lot of the sort of the things that Bernie Sanders is already doing, which is, you know, he's really popular among younger voters. He's really popular among more progressive voters.
Lindberg says Omar's endorsement of Sanders also shouldn't have a major impact on the presidential campaign of fellow Minnesota Democrat Amy Klobuchar, since there are still a lot of candidates left and because the Sanders backing was expected. Lindberg also doesn't think it represents a rift among state Democrats. He does believe the Minnesota GOP could use the endorsement in campaign attacks on Democratic candidates in local and statewide races. Lindbergh says that type of campaign fodder could especially show up in suburban territory where Omar doesn't have the strong backing that she does within Minneapolis.
There may be some impact there where it's more of the Republican Party using this, you know, as another example of how left-wing and radical Ilhan is, right, that she's supporting Bernie Sanders and that it's clearly a progressive wing and that the DFL in Minnesota is becoming that far left.
Lindbergh says the GOP could spin this endorsement in its attempt to unseat U.S. Senator Tina Smith. Mike Bowen, Minnesota News Connection.
The main roads in Baghdad have been blocked in continuing anti-government protests there. More than 250 have been killed in the clashes. Protesters are demanding better and more reliable water and electricity services, but also an end to foreign intervention in their politics by nations including Iran. A fierce storm left 55,000 homes in France without power. Winds in some places exceeded 100 miles an hour. Partial progress against those wildfires in California, the largest blaze, the Kincade Fire in Sonoma County, is now three-quarters contained. I'm Dan Hyman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Marijuana legalization might not mean a lot to you professionally, but it may to your clients and employees, bankers and investors, property owners and landlords. Minnesota Lawyer has got your back with the CanCon Business Symposium on Wednesday, November 6th at the Depot, Minneapolis. Denver-based researcher the Marijuana Policy Group will present data on the economic impact legislation has had in Colorado and how that might translate to Minnesota. You'll hear from professionals in other states that legalized marijuana about what's at stake for you. Human resources professionals can learn about the effects on employees and how the hiring process could change. Attorneys will learn how to protect their clients. Commercial real estate brokers and agents will hear about investment opportunities from an expert panel. Speakers include Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, Speaker of the House Ryan Winkler, and Senators Melissa Franzen, Jeff Hayden, and Scott Jensen, as well as several Minnesota business leaders. Learn strategies that work at the CanCon Business Symposium on Wednesday, November 6th at the Depot, Minneapolis. Register now at cancon.mn.com.
On November 10th, the University of Minnesota Center for Spirituality and Healing is offering a half-day mindfulness meditation retreat, which is open for those who have never practiced mindfulness or those who are daily practitioners. The mindfulness meditation retreat invites you to intentionally step away from daily routines and the busyness of everyday life for the purpose of renewal. Enjoy guided instruction from a skilled mindfulness teacher, sitting meditation, and gentle mindful movement. Space is limited. Register now at csh.umn.edu.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 23. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a high near 32. Tuesday night, about 1 to 2 inches of snow with a high near 30. And Wednesday, cloudy with a high around 32.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday only at the Moundsview Community Center. Featuring up to 150 home improvement companies, giveaways, and more. It's the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Moundsview Community Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Welcome back to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, our 4 o'clock show. Brett Johnson with you on a Monday afternoon, kind of cloudy Monday before the snow heads in tomorrow, expecting about an inch or two. So just recapping my thoughts on 2014, because it's the anniversary of the 2014 midterm elections. So looking back again at the Democratic strategy back then, it was all about branding. Oh, well, look at how crazy the Republicans are. That was pretty much the entire strategy on the part of Democrats. And unfortunately, to a degree, I don't think that strategy has actually changed all that much as we head into 2020. Now, during the 2020 election cycle, that might actually work for the Democrats if Donald Trump continues to poll very low with approval numbers and also in general election balloting. But you need to have something more than just saying, oh, well, look at how crazy these Republicans are. Because that, again, might work in 2020, but you're just setting yourself up for disaster in 2022 and 2024. So watch that when you're looking at some of the campaigns of the Democratic candidates, not just for the presidency, but other offices as well. Are they actually running on something, or is it just, well, look at how crazy the other side is? Because that doesn't work to get people fired up to vote. Because Republicans, they, of course, vote in every single election, no matter what. Democrats, not so much. So There are some national elections that are taking place tomorrow that could actually have an impact and kind of preview what could happen in 2020. And among them is actually Virginia, which is kind of an unusual state. They actually conduct their House of Delegates and state Senate elections in off years. They do those, for instance, back in 2017, or they're doing it this year in 2019 as well. And if you remember back to what happened in 2017, the Virginia State House actually ended in a literal 50-50 tie between the Republicans and the Democrats, and it literally went down to a coin flip in a race where the Republicans actually ended up winning and getting a majority. But the districts have been redrawn due to a gerrymandering ruling by a court, so they are technically drawn in a more fair way. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. That's one to actually pay attention to as you're following along with the results tomorrow, what actually happens in the Virginia House of Delegates. There's also one other national race taking place tomorrow. That is the Mississippi governor's race. Now, of course, the GOP is very heavily favored to hang on to that seat, but there, one interesting aspect I find about that is that even if the Democratic candidate were to win the popular vote, that still doesn't guarantee they would actually win the election just because of this goofy provision they have in Mississippi where you don't actually win the governor's mansion unless you win a majority of the state House of Representative districts. And with the way those are gerrymandered, that pretty much makes it impossible for a non-Republican to actually win. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Boy, I got so excited to bring Gary in Minneapolis on the phone line. I almost forgot the number here at AM 950. Let's talk to Gary. Hey, what's on your mind?
Hi, Brett. Just nice to talk to you. You're a good guy. Well, I just want to say something. You know, you probably heard me talk about the Republicans that are part of Herbert Hoover again. Mm-hmm. They always were a lot like that, but they got much more like it now since Reaganomics. And what I was going to say was, you know, Hoover, he would go around saying let nature take its course, and he was the same as they are. No government, at least for the people. They like government for the Pentagon and for the rich, you know, but not for us. But anyways, Hoover wouldn't do any government programs, and Roosevelt came in and changed all that and helped people out a whole lot when they were starving. But anyways, so they're probably a Herbert Hoover. But there's something I want to add to that. They always had the extremist element in this country, in the Republican Party in particular. And it got worse with the Republicans when the Southern Democrats were kicked out with civil rights by Humphrey and Johnson. And they became Republican. And they drew out all those moderate, more live-and-let-live Republicans like Chafee and the other guy. And he was the last one, too, Specter. They would vote with the Democrats. So they're gone. So they became very extreme. So I think they're the party of Joe McCarthy now, the commie hunter. And you know, Nixon would go after with the red paintbrush to ones that were Catholic, because Joe McCarthy wouldn't go after Catholics, and they did Ike's dirty work for him, you know, and then Ike probably went after McCarthy when McCarthy called Ike a commie, but he let him do all that dirt before that. So that extremist element was always there. Eleanor Roosevelt warned about it way back, and so did Hubert Humphrey. He said there's always been strains of fascism in this country. It's scary.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Gary. I wish I was running a tally during your phone call to try to figure out the number of names you dropped on me there. At least good 10 to 12 names that he was dropping there from history. Gary definitely knows his stuff when it comes to the history of politics. So heading back to the elections, which are taking place tomorrow, there are, of course, some local elections that folks are going to be watching closely, including in St. Paul, a city I don't live in, thankfully, because it sounds like a lot of money has been being spent on this whole debate on whether they're going to have a citywide trash service or at least continue it. They actually do have one right now. They're just voting on whether they're going to keep that in place. So we'll see what happens over in St. Paul in regards to that. It's an interesting election because it determines whether you actually want to have citywide collections where, in theory, everyone kind of pools their money together, and in theory, you actually get lower rates on your trash collection versus actually doing it as an individual where you can take your own risk and see if you can find your own rate, or what some people have actually done, which is actually like if you have you and three other neighbors that live near you, you actually pool your trash and have it collected in front of one neighbor's house, and then you equally split the bill. So that's one of the arguments we've heard against this citywide trash proposal that is in St. Paul. Also, lots of schools have referendums and levies on the ballot, including more than 30 districts that are trying to get voter approval for school building bonds, which, of course, would pay for things like school construction projects, safety upgrades, and building maintenance, so overall the basics. And there's 40 more districts trying to pass operating levies, which would pay for more of the kind of day-to-day school operations like employee salaries and classroom supplies. If you remember what happened last fall, all of the metro school districts in Minnesota actually ended up passing their levies, while in outstate Minnesota, it was only about half that actually got their levies and referendums passed. So at some point, we need to figure out to come up with a way where we can have equalized school funding for the entire state of Minnesota, because when you end up relying on property taxes, that does favor wealthier districts that generally can afford to raise their property taxes versus if you're talking about a rural area, especially parts that have been hit hard by the trade war, well, I can actually understand why some of those folks might actually vote no on a referendum simply because they can't afford to raise their property taxes. Some other local elections to highlight. This one in eastern Carver County. You, of course, might be familiar with what's been happening in eastern Carver County, that school district, over the past couple of months and years. They've had a lot of problems with race relations, and they've at least tried to mitigate that to some degree by having what's called an equity agenda, which tries to fight back against some of the racist problems they've been having in that district. Of course, they probably need to strengthen that even more, being that dating back to even of April or May of this year, they've had incidents where on Snapchat they had 25 African-American students' faces superimposed on Google Maps and imaged with the red locator labeled Negro Hill. Yikes. And then back in May of this year, the district allowed a picture of a white student wearing blackface to be printed in the Chaska High School yearbook. Those are just a few of the incidents. There was also one dating back to last December where a black middle school student discovered that white students had stolen his gym shirt, written the N-word on the shirt in three places, and stuffed it back in his locker for him to find when he got changed. So obviously, the Eastern Carver County School District probably needs to actually strengthen this equity agenda. But that hasn't stopped some voters in that area to actually come out and campaign against it, saying that the equity agenda is too extreme. Wow, so why would you have a problem with that when apparently it hasn't even gotten far enough, being that you still have a lot of these racist incidents still taking place in the Eastern Carver County School District? Also, one other vote to maybe keep an eye on is what's happening in Minnetonka. They have a very contentious school board election, being that recently Minnetonka said they're finally going to cap the number of students that can be open enrolled in the district, because this is actually a really shocking figure. Apparently, 37.5% of Minnetonka elementary students actually live outside the district. That's a huge number. That's three out of every eight students in Minnetonka actually don't live in the district. So there are a number of candidates who are voting or kind of running as a block called For Tonka. That's the number four Tonka that are voting on running on a policy of saying we're going to try to cap school district or open enrollment in Minnetonka, because they say even though the district did say they were going to cap it earlier, well, they've done that a couple other times and still continue to allow open enrollment. So one thing to point out with that, even if it's in Minnetonka or we're talking about in eastern Carver County or really any of these school board races, do keep an eye on when you have candidates that are kind of running on just one issue overall, or at least they're being perceived as being on running on one issue, because that's when you end up with school board candidates or school board members who basically are just elected on one issue, that's how you end up with some really ugly situations, especially in low turnout elections. I think that's partially what actually happened if you remember back to the Anoka-Hennepin School District in the late 2000s and early 2010s, when they actually had their policy in place, which basically allowed the bullying of LGBTQ students. It actually took a federal investigation to finally get the Anoka-Hennepin School District to change their policy of having their school members remain neutral on matters regarding sexual orientation. And that largely was due to the fact that you had a lot of one-issue school board members that got elected in the late 2000s and led to this, well, horrible policy that was put in place. So if you're going out and voting in those school board elections, educate yourself on who each of these candidates actually are, and are they actually running on more than just one issue? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll have a couple more miscellaneous news stories to wrap up the program ahead here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett.
If you listen to AM 950 regularly, you have heard about the work Better Futures Minnesota does and the services they offer. Join AM 950 Radio for an important breakfast dialogue and fundraiser to support them and their reintegration support services. This transformational breakfast is on Tuesday, November 5th at the Town and Country Club in St. Paul from 7 a.m. to 8:30. This fundraiser will celebrate Better Futures Minnesota's impact and invites allies like you to join them in continuing to build a movement to end the revolving door of Minnesota prisons and help men build a better life for themselves, their families, and their communities. Guest speaker Dr. Tommy Watson will lead an inspiring conversation about how we can work together to make real social and environmental impact by turning transitions into triumphs. Please consider supporting Better Futures Minnesota individually with a donation of your choice or at the gold, bronze, or silver level for the breakfast. Go to am950radio.com and click on the link to register, or go to eventbrite.com and search for Better Futures Minnesota.
This is Gregory Rich, founder of Habitation Furnishing and Design and host of Drink in the Style every Sunday at 5 p.m. You know, on the radio program, I often say that life is the big stuff, but living is in the details. The furniture in your home may be details, but that's where you do the living. So why not speak to one of Habitation's design professionals about making your space the best it can be? Habitation, 4317 Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park.
At Burger Mo's, Mondays no longer need to be a drag. Dine on the beautiful patio for Burger Monday Madness every Monday after 4 p.m., where you can order any burger and fries off menu for just $6. Not valid on Excel event evenings. Burger Mo's offers 20 fresh, never-frozen burger varieties, as well as delicious appetizers, soups, salads, and unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, with plenty of free parking, and online at burgermo's.com.
The British are coming! The British are coming! The British are coming! Hey, you there! I'm Paul Revere. The British are coming! Where is everyone?
Ben Franklin dispatched an evacuation warning on Facebook. Didn't you get it?
Hi, I'm Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If your marketing is behind the times, contact us today online at socialmediamn.com or at 763-244-4058. We can help your business message get dispatched and selected on social media and Google search. We offer uncomplicated, results-driven, and affordable internet marketing solutions for businesses of all sizes. Socialmediamn.com or 763-244-4058.
And we're back on the 4 o'clock show Monday afternoon. Brett Johnson along with Kate running the board. We still have time for a few more phone calls at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Well, House investigators are starting to release transcripts from their House impeachment investigations, including one that was conducted last month with Mike Pompeo. So, well, I guess those complaints about, oh, you're doing these investigations in the dark, well, starting to kind of go out the window. And by the way, as I brought this up earlier, I don't know why, if you're a Republican, you would actually want these investigations to be taking place in public because, at least in my mind, the more the spectacle you make out of the investigation, the more you get people paying attention to the impeachment trials and you get people more fired up about it. And that, of course, drives a turnout for probably people who don't like the president of the United States. So, yeah, I've never quite gotten the fact about why you would actually want those to be public because the more attention you have to the investigations, probably the worse it is for President Trump. Also, one more thing I got to bring up with President Trump here before I get to one final story is that he's basically gone out and have started to say that he's going to possibly expose information about the Ukrainian ambassador Vindman, who he says is a never-Trumper, and he says he'll be showing you evidence real soon that he actually is a never-Trumper and is apparently politically motivated. But the way I've kind of been looking at this is either when it comes to who's lying, is it Trump or is it Vindman? So either Trump is lying to try to save himself, or we have someone who is a Purple Heart, who is also a double agent for the Ukraine, and is also making false claims under oath, which would be one of the biggest cover-ups probably in political history if you had a guy who was functioning as a double agent for another country and also making false claims under oath, because keep in mind, if you're actually convicted of either of those, that would be treason, which is technically punishable by death. So, yeah, figure out which one of those two is actually lying in that situation. So this thing I found kind of interesting from actually Netflix of all places. So Seth Meyers, a comedian, if you're not familiar with him, told CNN that he asked Netflix to create a button for viewers to opt out of watching jokes about Donald Trump in his new comedy special in the same way Netflix users can bypass the introduction credits with the skip intro button at the top of some of the programs. And I actually kind of like this feature, not because I think we need to be censoring jokes about the President of the United States, but more the fact, and I've had some discussions with friends about this before, where I feel like at least in my taste of comedy, I generally don't like jokes about Donald Trump or George W. Bush going back to his years because they're just too easy to make. They don't really take a lot of talent whatsoever. So kind of a knock there at even folks like a Stephen Colbert. It's too easy to make jokes about Donald Trump or too easy to make jokes going back to 2008 and 2009 about George W. Bush. So kind of like this move from Seth Meyers actually putting a little button available on his Netflix special where you can skip jokes about Donald Trump. Let's go to one more phone call before we wrap up the show. Sorry, Ron, I only got about 30 seconds for you, but you wanted to talk about Biden?
I can get in there in 30 seconds. Biden, the reason that I like him is he's only going to be a long-term president because he'll be too old at 80. The other reason is he beats Trump in the key states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. None of the other Democrats do. That's it.
All right, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the call there, Ron. The only thing I would caution you is that polling numbers are very susceptible to move because he's interestingly in a very similar position as Hillary Clinton was in terms of poll numbers back in 2015 and 16. You hear the music, you know what that means. Our time is up. We'll talk to you on tomorrow's program.